Riley Elliott, good morning.
Good morning. How are we going?
Very well, thank you. What took you to Norfolk Island to study tiger sharks in the first place, Riley?
I was privileged to have an opportunity to be invited by Norfolk Island Tourism to go and film a shoot over there. And as a side story, one day on a day off, we potted around to this bay, and to I guess lack of surprise, there was a bunch of tiger sharks hanging around this bay feeding on offal. And we had an incredible encounter with them. It was the first time anyone had purposefully swum with these animals. And for me, as someone who that's my passion, but also my specialty, it was kind of like summiting a mountain for the first time, because I had no idea how they would react. You know, I'm talking to you today with all fingers and toes. And so that went well. But then 2 years later, a local who I met there said to me with quite a bit of concern, "Riley, Australia is taking over full governance in Norfolk Island, and what comes with that is some rules and bureaucracy. And one of those is that because Norfolk is a marine park, we are not allowed to dump organic waste into it," which makes sense conventionally. But there, that was going to remove a food source that has been going on for over 100 years. And the locals were concerned as to how the sharks may react.
Yes. In your documentary, just to set the scene or add to the scene, there's been a drought on Norfolk Island. The island can't support 1,300 cows anymore, and the sharks have been having an extra banquet. And you actually go out and watch a cow, a dead cow, floating in the ocean being attacked by the tiger sharks, yeah?
Yeah. You know, Norfolk Island, if people aren't aware, is a very, very small island. It's only 8 kilometres or something wide. And what happened and happens more and more these days is droughts make the water supply run low. People themselves are running short of it. And unfortunately, the older cows, the ones that aren't breeding, that aren't milking, end up being culled, and their meat isn't good. They don't have freezer space to save it for all their dog food. And unfortunately, they end up in the sea because the island is too small to bury it and risk contaminating what little groundwater they have left. And this doesn't happen regularly. It just so happened that when we arrived there, they were in the peak of this drought. And, you know, every Thursday and Sunday, the normal offal from the butchers, you know, the skins, the bones, the hides go into the water. But when we saw these full animals, these full cows, you know, being consumed by the sharks, objectively, it was, you know, fascinating scientifically, and how this was going to create perhaps habituation with these tiger sharks. You know, emotionally, it was a really weird thing to experience. But we were there with a scientific purpose, which was to determine how reliant the sharks in the area were on this feed, and therefore deduce what may happen if bureaucracy stops the food. The key point being, Norfolk Island has never in its history ever had a shark attack. But you remove food from a wild animal, if it's been habituated to that, you may start changing behaviours.
Yes, and one of the stats from your doco is that in Australia, for example, there have been 400 shark attacks over 30 years, 37 fatal, but no attacks, as you say, ever off Norfolk.
I'm probably not the only one who actually thought Norfolk was part of New Zealand, because they carry quite a similar sentiment to how engaged they are with their natural environment, the people of Norfolk. And they've taken a lot of pride in maintaining the health of the ecosystem there. They don't allow commercial fishing, for example. And that's also one reason why it's a marine park. But the point being is it's a very intact marine ecosystem. And intact marine ecosystems have top predators like sharks. But when you have a healthy marine ecosystem, the animals do what animals do. They don't have to bother, you know, eating outside of their known prey regime. Whereas around more populated areas like mainland Australia coasts, we've got fishing, commercial fishing. We've got a lot of people recreating. We've got industrial urbanization that makes the water turbid. You know, we've got a whole variety of variables that stack up and actually increase your risk of an adverse shark interaction. But Norfolk was unique because it's probably one of the sharkiest places on Earth. There's never been a shark attack, yet no shark research has ever been conducted there. And this feeding event has been going on for over 100 years. Before cows and the farming, it was whaling. And before that, it was one of the harshest penal colonies on Earth, where the prisoners who were forced to hard labor would voluntarily jump off cliffs rather than continue off through this harsh labor camp. So, it's a very colorful place. And for us, the question we wanted to do was help the locals decide, whether they should accept a potential ban on the dumping of offal or whether they should be entitled to, and what I agreed with, some scientific due diligence before we change things.
Emily Bay on Norfolk, if you go online with a view to going on holiday there, is touted to be one of the safest swimming spots in the world. So the obvious worry off the back of what you are saying is that that won't be the case any longer if the locals can't dump their organic waste and feed it to the sharks.
Well, this is the beauty of science and applying science to what is, an emotionally charged but relevant potential issue. And so what we did was we tagged the sharks individually with specific acoustic tags that send out a signal. Our mission was to see how the sharks use the island and contrast that with human activities. And what we found was quite fascinating, and I don't want to give away the show, but you just Google Emily Bay, like you say, and it's this phenomenally beautiful, enclosed and protected beach because of the reef ecosystem. And it's always been perceived like that. But until you apply science, you don't have actual factual understanding as to whether that's the reality. We didn't want to portray the islands as some people who are monsters and barbarians throwing cows off cliffs and feeding sharks. And, well, what do they expect if one bites them? And, dramatize it. What we wanted to do was use pure science to give people real answers in modern time because there hasn't been attacks there historically.
All right. I understand you can't give away the entire content of your documentary, but at the same time, we know that when we go swimming, so the saying goes, you're never far from a shark. So I think we can maybe make some inferences. I've got some other questions, though. And first of all, is there any sign that the Australian government, because of what you've found, might revise its attitude towards dumping offal into a marine park?
Yeah, it's a great question. I didn't want to put pressure on the Australian government through this show. I didn't want to give them an ultimatum. This documentary is part of Shark Week. That will be likely the first time the Australian government has caught wind of this. And at the end, I make it very, very clear what the scientific recommendation would be. And it fits well with what the islanders would want, and it fits well with what any logical person would perceive, and enable policymakers to go, well, this actually, does require some consideration. And we don't just blanket lay out policies that may be relevant to one area but not another.
I'm inferring that your inclination is towards some kind of arrangement that will allow the sharks to keep being fed.
We had 2 weeks there. We can't come to conclusions in that amount of time. So, yeah, really, it's about encouraging the Australian government, if they are going to change something, to do due diligence. Sharks, luckily, aren't dumb enough to rely on humans to be fed. But tiger sharks have learned, and they're one of the best in the world, to turn up at places at certain times the day before it happens to get the food source that they've learned occurs at that time, like albatross fledglings or turtle hatcheries. And it's not ironic that all these tiger sharks seem to appear just as this drought was peaking. So it's quite a phenomenon.
Without wanting to anthropomorphize this, and you will know whether I'm doing that or not, it was quite dramatic for you out on the ocean watching all these sharks tear into that cow carcass. And the sharks, in a sense, seem to know they have an arrangement here, and it's such a good arrangement that they resent any incursion, like your boat being right on top of them. We always kind of think that sharks mostly ignore boats, but they did not ignore yours.
Yeah, we were blown away, like literally blown away scientifically and emotionally by what we witnessed. And the locals were too. What we found was far beyond what anyone expected. Tiger sharks, believe it or not, albeit being one of the third deadliest sharks in the world, are incredibly shy species of shark. And that's because they're a scavenger. But when we tried to insert ourselves into, I guess you can imagine, a lion kill with a pack of lions and you walk in there with a camera, they're understandably going to start defending their territory. we use skill, experience, and above all, respect for these animals before we enter their space, and are smart enough to say when we shouldn't get in the water.
You do get in the water at some point because you have shots from underneath the sharks. You've had a great white jump into your boat, I think, in South Africa. You know all about close encounters with sharks.
When they land in your lap or in your boat, as the shark did, all you can do is be humbled by it, realize that you're stepping into that world you don't belong in. And in that case, do the very best with the skills and the experience that you'd learnt that time, and help that animal that would otherwise not be in that situation if you weren't there. And it's awesome to be showing, some of these stories that exist in our backyard are very close to it.
You once resuscitated, I was reading, a large apex predator shark. Presumably, you didn't use mouth to mouth.
Like, sharks have to swim to breathe. And in Western Australia, they were basically culling sharks because of a handful of adverse interactions with them. And while tragic, I don't think anyone would think it would be justified to go kill all the lions in the savannas so we can have Wimbledon there. I've got a recipe that has enabled me to communicate science to a wider audience than just through publication, and that is generate stimulating visual imagery. Lace that with science and use the media to communicate it. And in doing this rescue with this tiger shark, which then swam off alive, it was a beautiful Cinderella story that attracted mass global media attention. And through that, we were able to communicate the scientific fact that shark culls don't make beaches safer. And that, in collaboration with public opinion, helped sway the policymakers to remove the Western Australia shark cull and look into scientific and proven alternatives.
If it's not just coincidence that there have been no shark attacks on Norfolk Island through the 100 years of feeding the sharks offal and the occasional cow, then it calls into question all the opinion we have on how it might be dangerous to attract sharks off the coast, with meat or anything. One possible conclusion is that the sharks have been satisfied and have not wanted to attack any humans during that time, but we don't know that for sure.
Look, what's important to understand with sharks, and it doesn't help reduce people's fear or emotional anxiety, but it's the fact, is that sharks don't hunt people. And the proof of that is that they're pretty good at what they do. If they wanted to eat us, we'd be getting munched every day. In the context of Norfolk Island, it's a healthy ecosystem. Sharks do what they do. The cows aren't a natural food source, but they're not going to pass up something that's that easy to have. And what's incredible is they pass up surfers every day, which are easy to have. So, it's a hard world to understand, but I think you got to give kudos to the sharks for not hurting people more often because we're pretty easy targets.
Right, so it's possible that the practice of using the sharks as garbage collectors, if you like, is environmentally okay, and that is something you want to be revised.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying we should be recycling our food products in the ocean by feeding sharks it, but fish waste, of course. I don't think that should be going into a landfill. And luckily in New Zealand, we use it for things like fish farm food. This is a unique situation on Norfolk. The only reason the cows were in the water is because they couldn't bury them on land like we would normally do with offal pits. That's why science is required in this scenario to measure the reliance, the potential habituation, and therefore understand unequivocally what will happen if that food source was to stop.
Out of interest, have the locals now ceased and desisted from putting their offal in the ocean? Are they kind of waiting to see the lie of the land? Do you know what's actually happening right now?
Well, the vast majority of Norfolk Islanders were highly against stopping this organic waste going back into the sea. They also put back a lot of their fish frames into the ocean, and that would become illegal also. This potential law change is based on things like the Great Barrier Reef, where it's understandable we don't want to be dumping organic waste into some ecosystem like that. Yet we also all acknowledge that putting your fish frames back in the ocean is probably the best place for it, as long as it's done in a way that isn't, adversely affecting the environment or people's activities. So the Norfolk Islanders don't want to stop what they've been doing.
And if it did stop, You personally would think twice about swimming in Emily Bay?
Look, Norfolk Island relies on tourism to survive. And we last thing we want to do is spook people by saying it's the sharkiest place on earth. And if they stop this, well, geez, God forbid. That's not at all what our conclusions were. It was that before you change anything in a scenario, you should figure out first what the consequences are going to be and then address those. So, like, I swam in Emily Bay every single day and I was swimming out there with the sharks too. It's all about being aware of what's going on in the environment around you. And if you're doing it without knowledge or an understanding, well, that's naivety, I guess. But I can guarantee you anyone who wants to go to Norfolk Island, Emily Bay is as safe as can be. It has been like that forever. And, I had a fantastic time going to Norfolk Island. The great people, great history, colorful albeit, and I'd recommend anyone go there.
Those tiger sharks are beautiful, but gee, they're fierce as well in your documentary out there. They're big monsters of the deep.
Yeah, they were challenging me for their food. There was times when I read that and said, okay, I should get out. But there were times when I've learned how to read the body language of an animal and give it back. And there's some scenes in there where you'll see that. And you'll see that, I guess, awesome respect of their language and how through time I've been lucky to learn it. And by implementing it, can kind of hold my own in the water there to do what we had to do, which was tag some of these animals. But yeah, there's times when a wild animal of that size, 20 feet or so, wants you out of the water, you'll get out.
You're a brave man, and it's an interesting conundrum on that island, and your documentary makes that quite plain. Good to talk with you, Riley, and all the best. Thanks for giving us your time.
Cheers. No, thank you. It was a fantastic chat. Call up anytime if anything else comes to interest this summer. I'm sure there'll be more shark encounters.